had some, you know, excellent meat in Lugano.
How would you describe the multiple attack vectors to which all of our data is exposed?
The internet is a wonderful and a terrible thing. Like many tools, you know, it can be used for both good and evil. But the really tricky thing from a security perspective with the internet is that as soon as you put yourself online, as soon as you connect to this network, you're creating a door. And this door can be opened and walked through by potentially billions of people if you don't have really good locks on it. So, you know, it's something that is, I think, out of reach for most people to fully understand all of the implications of how to secure the doors from all of these bad actors, whether it's just a teenage hacker in their mother's basement or nation state agent working out of a bunker in North Korea. It's a very wide range of threats, really too many to even try to talk about to get people to understand. So we have to build our software and our hardware to protect people from these threats without them really even having to understand all the implications.
And in Bitcoin terms, is it the same thing or are there other things to worry about?
Yeah, I mean, from working in Bitcoin for nearly a decade now, what I found the easiest way to put people in a very good position, a strong security posture for their own Bitcoin holdings, is to actually take those keys, you know, take the access to your Bitcoin off of the internet and pull it into the physical world. And this is for several reasons, one of which is, of course, as soon as you take it off the internet, you no longer have billions of people who can knock on your door, try to walk through and try to steal your keys and all of your money. The other is that just due to the complexity of cybersecurity, it's much easier for the average person to understand physical security. You know, you have something physical that you can hold in your hand, that you can put in a safe, that you can hide somewhere that nobody else knows about, and it's easier for people to, you know, control access to something that's physical.
Can you give us three pieces of advice to be safe in this context?
Thankfully, the amount of physical attacks that have happened are relatively small in the context of all of the digital attacks that happen. You know, it is a lot riskier for an attacker to have to go somewhere physically and put their own life in danger to attack someone in the real world. But it's very easy to protect yourself from these, and it basically comes down to privacy. If you are not going around broadcasting that you have a lot of Bitcoin or broadcasting that, you know, you're buying Lamborghinis or $100,000 watches, you know, basically not flashing luxury items on the internet where a lot of people can see them, you know, those are the things that will make you a target for someone who might come to your house or, you know, otherwise track you down and coerce you into handing over a lot of your valuables.
What have you learned so far about all the elements you've been tested?
Yeah, it's a large industry now, right? For any given wallet or backup or whatever, there are probably hundreds of options to choose from. And, you know, this can be overwhelming for the average person who doesn't want to spend hours, days, weeks doing a lot of in-depth research. So yeah, I do have a few projects where I have tried to test as many of these products as possible, give them some really high level scores and grades just so that people can, I think, have an understanding of whether or not they actually hold up to the promises that they make in their marketing materials. And the short version for most everything is to keep it simple. So, you know, when it comes to something like a backup, then usually having only one piece of metal, for example, is better than something where you're actually taking dozens of pieces of metal and putting them together in different configurations.
Why is it important to avoid complexity?
Right. Complexity can often be marketed to you as, you know, having a lot of features, as, you know, being able to do many things, or in some cases, we have this saying of security through obscurity. Sometimes there will be products and services out there that they put a lot of complex instructions up front of like how you can access or use the product. And it may seem like that that would make it very difficult for an attacker to get through all of those hurdles. But in most of those cases, there are workarounds where an attacker would, you know, bypass most of that. Or, in fact, some of those extra steps create vulnerabilities. So I often say that, you know, complexity is the enemy of security. And that is because it's just, it's more difficult to fully understand all of the security attributes of a system if it is more complicated. The more pieces there are to a system, the more interactions there are, the more possible vulnerabilities there are, and the more time it takes to actually analyze the whole system and be more confident in it.
Let's pretend you are a hacker. What's the main thing you do to steal my Bitcoin?
Most of it just has to do with reusing vulnerabilities in other systems. So we know that people are lazy. A lot of people don't even use password managers. They probably use the same one or two or three passwords in all of the different services that they use. And the other thing that we know is that over a long enough amount of time, almost every third-party service out there will get attacked, will get breached, and their database will probably get leaked and sold on the darknet. So one of the most common things that we see happen, actually, is just people buying up, you know, stolen credentials, essentially using this to impersonate someone. And if you run an online service like I have for many years, then what you see happen in your logs is basically people come to you and they just go through a whole list of usernames and passwords and try every possible username and password that has been leaked that they've been able to get their hands on, because they know that some of them will probably have been reused on many different services. So the best thing that anyone can do just for general cybersecurity is to use a password manager and have that password manager generate your passwords for you. Like, if you know your own passwords off the top of your head, you're doing it wrong.
What should I do when I get my very first sets?
Yeah, so when it comes to actually securing your Bitcoin, it's going to be different for everyone. And one of the things that I think comes into play first is how much are we talking about? You know, I usually categorize it into three different tiers. You have your pocket money, basically an amount that you probably walk around with in your wallet, maybe $100, couple hundred dollars, euros, francs worth of Bitcoin. Then you have, you know, small investments, somewhere from $100 to a few thousand dollars, and this will vary from person to person. And then you have sort of life-changing, you know, substantial amount of your net worth that you have in this system. And each of these different tiers, I think, requires different trade-offs. And most of the time, the trade-offs that we talk about are between convenience of using and accessing it versus securing it, which is, you know, literally making it inconvenient to access, you know, both for yourself and for attackers. So for really small amounts, it's actually not terrible if you, you know, keep that with a trusted third party, because even if that trusted third party gets hacked or takes your money, it's probably not going to meaningfully affect the rest of your life. You'll get over it just like you would if you, you know, dropped your wallet on the street and, you know, had to start over. For a non-trivial investment, you probably at least want to take self-custody of it, you know, withdraw that money to a wallet you control yourself. And I would say probably take it offline. So this means you're going to be making an investment of somewhere between $50 and $100 for a hardware device, Trezor, Ledger, Cold Card. There's a lot of good ones out there. And, you know, this will protect you from really like 99% of the possible attacks out there, because you're no longer exposed to any of the hackers online. It's really only physical attacks and loss that you have to worry about. And then finally, at the extreme end, if you have such a substantial amount of your net worth that's in this system then your primary goal should be to eliminate single points of failure. Basically, you want a setup that is so robust that you can make a mistake. You know, you can be human, you can have something go wrong and not result in that being a catastrophic loss that you'll regret for the rest of your life. And that's really what I've focused on for the entirety of my career in this space, is using aspects of the protocol, best practices that we've learned over the years from seeing many people lose their money, and employing hardware and software in such a way that it can protect people. So, you know, this generally comes down to putting your money into an architecture that has multiple keys. We often use the term multisig or multi-signature, and having those keys on offline devices and distributing those keys geographically. And it's this distribution across different devices from different companies and different supply chains and putting them in different physical places, which means that if something goes wrong with any one of those keys, then it's fine. You just go buy a new key and you can rotate your key material to reconstitute your key set. But, you know, this can be overwhelming for the average person. They're probably hearing terms like multi-sig and multi-keys and stuff, and they're like, I don't know how to do all this. So, you know, that's why I started a company that specifically is for, you know, a consulting service to help people do that.
If there is one question you could ask Satoshi, what would it be?
I would ask Satoshi what they moved on to after Bitcoin. What was so interesting to them that they thought it was better to work on than Bitcoin?
What do you like the most about Lugano so far?
Lugano is a great walkable city, very clean, with many Bitcoin merchants, so that, you know, I can walk around and not even have to exchange any of my dollars for francs, which is very convenient.
What do you think about Lugano becoming a Bitcoin adoption hub?
It's interesting to see, because I've been to a few other places around the world that have done that. But I think Lugano is the first where it's already, you know, a very wealthy city. You know, it's a first world nation, already had, you know, great access to banking. And it's something that has been done not necessarily out of necessity of the merchants, but rather because I think that they understand some of the complexities and intricacies of the financial system, and that it's great to have alternatives, even if you may not feel like you need them.
Did you have the opportunity to buy something with Bitcoin in Lugano?
Yes, I've been to some restaurants and had some excellent meat in Lugano.
If you have to convince someone to go to Lugano, what will you tell them?
Well, Switzerland is an excellent nation with a very long history of, you know, neutrality and also, you know, banking privacy and freedom. So, you know, if you're interested in freedom and privacy and living well, I think, you know, Switzerland provides a nice little, you know, pocket in the middle of Europe for people to do that.